You're in Lapensick. He'll take you to a place where you may rest until I finish my conversations.
A minute later, the two Myth found themselves in a small but well-furnished lounge.
What was the problem back there?
Thras asked as he chose one of the lounge chairs and sat down.
The problem?
You looked somewhat put out when Lomiov and Lapensick wouldn't play Riddle Me with you,
Thras said.
Thrawn looked away,
an echo of that same expression again crossing his face.
I wasn't put out, Thras, he said quietly. I was disappointed. People who can't see things that are right in front of them...
He shook his head.
This may come as a shock to you, Thras warned. But most people don't see things nearly as quickly or as clearly as you do.
I know,
Thrawn said.
I just wish... It's not important.
He lowered himself into the chair beside Thras's and pulled out his questus.
We need to focus our attention on the hijacking.
Right,
Thras agreed, pulling out his own questus.
Can't let Lomiov and the Stibler have all the fun. You have a plan for tracking down the criminals?
No. We'll leave that to the two patriarchs,
Thrawn said.
It's clear that something aboard that ship is vital to Lomiov. Let's focus on that.
Thras frowned.
I assumed he cared about the whole cargo.
No,
Thrawn said.
At least not primarily. There's one particular item that he's predominantly interested in.
If you say so,
Thras said.
How do we start?
We find the cargo listings and the locations where each of the items was taken aboard,
Thrawn said.
We try to ascertain the pirate's specific target, then try to figure out where they might have taken it.
Sounds good,
Thras said.
And Thrawn?
Thrawn looked up.
Yes?
Remember what I just said about people not seeing things as quickly as you do?
Thras asked.
That thing about the Patriarch, mostly caring about one item, that was one of them.
Chapter 8.
Killori had expected to spend at least a couple of hours floating through the vast emptiness while Thrawn decided whether or not the pod was worth picking up. Discovering that the pod's automatic beacon wasn't functional raised that estimate to somewhere between several hours and the remainder of his short, oxygen-starved life. It was therefore a surprise, though a welcome one, when he'd been traveling for barely 20 minutes, when a section of the starscape was blotted out, and he felt the tug of a tractor beam as it locked onto the pod. 10 minutes after that, the hatch opened into the warmth and security and artificial gravity of the Chiss warship. 5 minutes, and a very thorough security frisking after that, he was standing in a small ready room, facing Thrawn.
Senior Captain,
Killori said, bowing his head.
I thank you for the rescue.
Does the other Kilgi ship also employ a Pathfinder?
Thrawn interrupted. Killori felt his cheek winglets twitch. What kind of question was that?
Yes, they do.
Good, Thrawn said, standing up and gesturing to Killori's guards.
Take him to the bridge. You're going to chase down that other Pathfinder for us.
What?
Killori managed, as the two blueskins took his upper arms and turned him back toward the hatch.
No, I can't. That's not possible.
You forget, Killori of Uandualon, that I know your secret,
Thrawn said, falling into step beside him as the guards marched him down the corridor.
I know how Pathfinders in hyperspace are able to sense one another.
He turned those disturbing, glowing red eyes on him.
You've used that ability to aid pirates, military attack forces, and General Yiv himself. Do I need to remind you what the other nations of the region would do if they also knew that?
No,
Kilori said between clenched teeth.
But I didn't say I was unwilling. I said it wasn't possible. I left my sensory deprivation headset on the anvil. And without it, I can't join with the Great Presence.
You also forget that I've seen the headset you use, Thrawn said. Something similar will be waiting for you.
The bridge was a flurry of activity when they arrived. Kilori was escorted to the navigator's chair. A very nice, very well-padded chair, he noted as he sat down, and was handed a cobbled-together monstrosity of a headset.
Will this suffice? Thrawn asked.
Kilori pretended to study the headset, his eyes flicking over the board in front of him as he did so. He could read the Chiyun labeling reasonably well. Unfortunately, there was nothing there that might indicate the presence of a mechanical navigator. But then, those controls would probably be disguised, lest some casual alien visitor notice them. He slipped on the headset for a quick test. The thing was clumsy and inelegant, but it should do the job.
Yes, it'll work,
he said. He took it off, set it on the edge of the board, and began strapping in.
Good, Thrawn said. You will locate the other Pathfinder and follow him. I'll let you know when you're to stop.
The Chiss put a restraining hand on the headset as Kilori picked it up again.
And I'm fairly certain I know where that ship is going, he warned. Don't try to mislead me.
Kilori's winglets twitched.
I won't.
Thrawn lifted his hand away, and Kilori again settled the headset in place, blocking out the bridge, the Chiss, and the rest of the universe. Slipping into his trance, he let the Great Presence surround and fill him. The Hammer's Pathfinder. There he was. Kilori felt his winglets tense. He'd expected the picket cruiser to return to the system where the two Pathfinders had been brought after being hired. But that wasn't the case. Instead, the Hammer was headed in a completely different direction. If Thrawn thought he knew where they'd come from and expected them to go back... But there was nothing Kilori could do about that. He'd been ordered to follow the Hammer, and trying to anticipate or second-guess what Thrawn wanted or didn't want would be a dangerous and probably futile game. Bracing himself, he reached for the controls. He frowned inside the headset. The chair itself, as he'd already noted, had been set at the proper height and width. But the control board itself was noticeably too close. Had they somehow missed the length of his arms when they pre-adjusted it for him? No matter. He could make do. Getting a grip on the controls, he launched the ship into hyperspace. It seemed that he was nestled within the Great Presence for a long time, the glow permeating his mind. The other Pathfinder, an extra bright spark in the distance. But it was probably only a few minutes before he felt the distant touch of a hand on his shoulder. A touch that gradually grew stronger and more insistent. Reluctantly, he let go of the glow, and the Great Presence faded, and he was once again blind and deaf in the midst of people who probably distrusted him and certainly resented him. He pulled off the headset. Thrawn was standing beside him, gazing out at the pulsating hyperspace sky.
Is there a problem, Senior Captain?
He asked carefully.
No, Thrawn said.
Kilori felt his winglets stiffen. From Thrawn's expression and voice, it was clear there was definitely something wrong. Fortunately, the problem didn't seem to be with Kilori himself.
What happens now?
You'll be taken to your quarters, Thrawn said, motioning him out of the chair. And then we'll return to Rupak.
Your quarters? Apparently, Kilori was to be a guest aboard the Blueskin warship for a while. Still, it could have been worse. Thrawn could have had him taken to the brig.
Thank you again for the rescue,
he said as he stood up.
Please let me know if there's anything more I can do for you.
I will, Thrawn said softly. Those glowing eyes once again digging deep into Kilori's soul. Indeed, I will.
Thalias's intent, to the extent that she had enough mental ability left to form any goals at all as she stumbled to her bed, was to sleep as long as she could. 8 hours, at least. Possibly 10, or even 12. And she would wake up bright, alert, and refreshed. She was therefore somewhat surprised to find herself still bleary-eyed when the insistent yapping of the intercom dragged her out of a deep and dreamless sleep. A surprise that turned to groggy disbelief when she checked the chrono and found she'd been asleep barely 3 hours. She propped herself up on one elbow, too tired even to be annoyed, and tapped the key. Yes?
Bridge!
The voice of Senior Commander Carol came from the speaker.
Senior Captain Thrawn needs to see you right away.
Thalias frowned, some of the sleep cobwebs dissipating. Last she'd heard, the Springhawk had been within a quick jump-by-jump of Rupak, where Thrawn was supposed to wake the Magus from her hibernation and turn her over to the Pakosh. The whole process should have taken several hours at least. Had something gone wrong?
Understood, she told Carol, pushing herself the rest of the way into a seated position and looking across the room at the hibernation chamber.
Or rather, at the empty section of bulkhead where the hibernation chamber used to be. Sometime in the past 3 hours, while Thalias had been asleep, someone had come in and taken it out.
Just make sure you're ready,
Carol warned.
He's in a hurry.
Understood, Thalias said again.
She keyed off the intercom and ran her fingers through her hair, flinching at the itchiness of her scalp. She hadn't bothered to change into her nightshirt before collapsing onto the bed, so at least she didn't have to worry about getting dressed. Unfortunately, that had also left her skin with the unpleasant sticky feeling that always happened when she slept in her clothes. From outside her sleeping room came the hatch chime. Thalias got to her feet, weaving slightly for the first couple of steps as she fought to get her balance. She crossed her room and the day room and opened the hatch. Thrawn was standing there, his face grim, his eyes looking distracted.
Caregiver,
he greeted her tersely, stepping past her into the day room before she could even invite him in.
I need to speak with you.
Of course, Thalias said, closing the hatch behind him. Would you like to sit down?
There's no time, Thrawn said,
stopping 3 steps into the room and turning to face her.
I'll be leaving the Springhawk in half an hour, and I need you to...
You're what?
Thalias interrupted, the last remnants of sleep flash-burning from her mind.
Please, just listen, Thrawn said. I don't have much time. We reached the Rupak system to find 2 Kilji ships threatening the Pakosh. There was a battle, a brief battle, and one of the ships escaped and appears to be headed towards Sunrise. I need to get there as quickly as possible to see who they're meeting with, try to learn their plans, and determine how they can be stopped before they inflict more damage.
All right,
Thalias said, her head spinning worse than it had been when she first woke up. She'd slept through a battle?
Do you need Chiri on the bridge?
No. She needs to sleep, Thrawn said. I'll be leaving Mid-Captain Simakro in command here while Wingali and I head out in the Aelos. We're taking the mages with us.
No, wait! Thalias protested. You're going too fast. Why are you going with Wingali instead of taking the Springhawk?
Because the Springhawk is under orders from Supreme General Barkeef to return to the Ascendancy immediately after we deliver the mages to Rapark, Thrawn said. Disobeying that order would bring serious consequences, not just for me, but also for all my senior officers. Simakro and the ship have to go back.
But why can't you stay with us?
Thalias pressed.
Can't Wingali and the Pakosh go without you?
Of course they can. Thrawn's lip twitched. But they won't. Wingali will only put his people into a mission of such danger if I agree to command it.
Thalias stared at him. Oh, she said, wincing at the sheer emptiness of the word. Well, can we come along? Chiri and me? I know she'd be willing.
Thank you, but no, Thrawn said. I need you and Chiri to take the Springhawk home.
What about just me, then? Thalias pressed. I was with you at the start of this whole Pakian thing. I should be allowed to see the end of it.
This is hardly the end, Thrawn said. No matter what happens at sunrise, the Pakosh will endure. Besides, you need to be here to take care of Chiri.
Not really, Thalias said. She can navigate the Springhawk just fine on her own.
Thalias, this is becoming silly, Thrawn chided gently. I know you fear the late Patriarch Thuraki told you to watch over me, but risking your career and reputation isn't the way to do that. Thalias set her jaw.
I don't have much career. I don't have any reputation, and I don't care about either of them. Lives are on the line here, and not just yours. The Pakosh and the Magus's people are also at risk.
I commend your priorities and your sense of justice, Thrawn said. But this is a path I must take on my own. He gestured toward her sleeping room. Now you need to get back to sleep. Simakro will begin the journey home via jump by jump, but he'll need you and Chiri as soon as you're able to take over navigation. Take care of her, and please, give her my farewells.
Thalias swallowed against the sudden lump in her throat. I will. Please, be careful, sir.
I will.
Thrawn smiled at her.
Farewell, Thalias.
For a long moment after he left, she just stared at the closed hatch, a cold sense of dread fighting against her exhaustion. Never mind what Thalias might do to her career. What was Thrawn about to do to his? She took a deep breath. Simakro. She needed to talk to Mid-Captain Simakro. But not now. Not yet. She needed to carefully time that confrontation to make sure it fell between the moment Thrawn left the Springhawk and the moment when he and Wingali planned to depart for sunrise. The Springhawk had captured and carried a Nicardune blockade frigate once before. Surely Simakro could do the same thing again. And once the smaller craft was secured, Thrawn would either listen to reason or be bodily hauled back to the Ascendancy. Wingali wouldn't like it. The Sindicura would be furious. But at least Thrawn would still be alive. Turning, Thalias headed toward the food prep area. Half an hour, Thrawn had said, before he left. Not enough time for a shower, but more than enough to brew herself a cup of strong cacao leaf. She would sit on the couch, get some stimulant into her, and be ready the moment Thrawn left the ship. Only that wasn't what happened. 5 hours later, she woke with a start from a horrible nightmare. Her neck cricked from the odd angle her head had settled into against the back of the couch, the mug of cold cacao leaf sitting barely touched on the side table. And the repeater displays below the snack bar showing that the Springhawk was already in hyperspace. Cursing viciously, uselessly under her breath, she got her shoes on and raced to the bridge. Simacro was seated in the command chair, gazing moodily at the hyperspace swirl rushing past outside the viewport.
Mid-Captain,
Thalias breathed as she hurried to his side.
There you are,
Simacro said, his voice as dour as his expression.
I expected you 5 hours ago.
We're on our way back to the Ascendancy?
Thalias asked, just to be sure.
Where else would we be going?
Simacro countered.
We're under orders, as I'm sure Senior Captain Thrawn told you.
Thalias swallowed back another useless curse.
So you just let him go?
She accused.
I thought you weren't big on expansionary defense fleet officers abandoning their posts.
He looked sideways at her.
What makes you say that?
You weren't happy with Senior Captain Lakinda leaving the Greyshrike for the Zodlak family emergency call.
No one who was at that meeting would have told you that.
I'm getting good at reading faces.
Thalias raised her eyebrows.
I also note you're not denying it.
With a snort, Simacro turned back to the viewport.
My commander gave me an order, he said. My duty is to obey that order.
Even if it costs that commander his career?
Thalias shot back.
Even if it costs him his life?
He'll be all right, Simacro said.
You can't possibly believe that,
Thalias bit out.
You were the one who told me that the rest of the Nicardoon were gathering their forces at sunrise where they could launch new attacks.
I never said we knew that for a fact,
Simacro said, his voice sounding a little odd.
It was only a theory.
But Senior Captain Thrawn's theories are usually right.
Usually, but not always,
Simacro said.
In this case, look, Wingali has a full commando squad aboard the Aelos. They wanted to be ready for an enemy ship that was careless enough to get within boarding range. Trust me, he knows what he's doing.
Thalias frowned.
I thought he needed Senior Captain Thrawn to lead the attack.
Is that what the Senior Captain told you?
Simacro gave a little snort.
Hardly. Wingali wants him aboard, because if it goes badly, a Chiss senior officer will have been captured or killed.
Thalias stared at him, her stomach wrenching with sudden understanding.
They're trying to force the Ascendancy to take military action.
Of course they are,
Simacro said, his lip twisting.
Don't sound so outraged. It's the exact same trick you and Senior Captain Thrawn used against General Yiv. I'm just a little surprised Wingali knew about it.
I figured that by now everybody knew we don't attack unless attacked first,
Thalias said between clenched teeth.
So how do we get him out?
Simacro grimaced.
We go back to the Ascendancy and report. If we're lucky, this and the attacks over Sunrise will be enough to get the Sindicure off their collective rear end.
That'll be way too late.
Maybe.
Simacro huffed out a sigh.
Probably,
he conceded.
But it's all we've got.
For a moment, neither of them spoke. Thalias gazed out the viewport, watching as the Springhawk flew farther and farther from its captain.
Thank you for your honesty, Mid-Captain,
she said.
You're welcome,
Simacro said.
I suggest you go back and get some more sleep. We want you and Chiri back on duty as soon as she's ready. The faster we get to Chila, the faster we can get something put together to go help Senior Captain Thrawn.
Yes,
Thalias murmured. Simacro was right, of course, she knew as she returned to the Skywalker suite. Speed was going to be called for, and the faster the better. A crisis was upon them, and Thalias knew what she had to do. She could only hope Chiri would be willing to do the same.
Chapter 9.
Thurfian delivered his report to the Defense Hierarchy Council 3 hours after the Kilji warship left Avidage orbit and disappeared back into the vast reaches of interstellar space between the worlds of the Ascendancy.
Within 6 hours, the Dasklo, Zodlak, Irigal, and Pomrio families had all lodged protests with the Sindicure, accusing the myth of engaging in innuendo tactics, denouncing Thurfian's report and demanding he withdraw his accusations or else offer proof of his claims.
The fact that Thurfian had made no claims of his own, but had merely reported on someone else's, either passed them by or were deliberately ignored. Usually such political outrages quickly faded into the background as the various families sorted out their alliances and rivalries, strengthening, reforming, or redefining as needed, until a new dispute arose to replace it. But in this case, the outrage melded with a rising level of dark anticipation. This latest scandal had come on the heels of the Hoxim incident, which was itself far from resolved. Moreover, it had originated from an alien warship, and as the Defense Force scrambled to provide additional protection for the major Chiss worlds, the various families began making quiet preparations of their own. 3 days after making his report, Thurfian finally received the expected call from Syndic Prime Zistalmu.
I don't know what to say,
Zistalmu growled, his expression showing a mix of disbelief and suspicion.
An alien warship pops in over Avidich, talks to your Patriel, spins some wild claims about the Dasklo being up to no good, and then pops out again?
I know, it sounds fantastic, Thurfian conceded, but that's what happened.
He talked to your Patriel? About a threat to the Klar?
Zistalmu said.
Not the Klar, Patriel? Yours?
Maybe Jixtus wasn't sure who he should talk to,
Thurfian said.
The Myth have the largest presence of all the 49 on Avidich. Maybe he wanted to talk to the family more or less in charge of the planet.
He knew the names of the 4 families he says are involved,
Zistalmu countered.
Why not one of them? Why you?
I already said I don't know,
Thurfian said patiently.
I presume you have a theory.
For a moment, Zistalmu seemed to study his face.
The Irigal, Zodlak, and Pomrio were at Hoxim,
he said.
Jixtus could have learned those names there.
Or from the Agbui, who apparently goaded them into going to Hoxim in the first place.
I suppose that's possible,
Zistalmu said.
But there was one other family present at Hoxim. Senior Captain Thrawn and the Springhawk.
Which, according to all reports, was being pummeled by alien gunships when the 3 family forces arrived,
Thurfian reminded him.
So they say,
Zistalmu said, his eyes narrowing slightly.
We've already dismissed the idea that he was caught in an ambush. So tell me, Thurfian, when was the last time you heard about him being pummeled?
Thurfian felt his throat tighten. He wondered that same thing since the first bits of information about Hawksim began trickling out. He'd wondered about it a lot.
I thought the whole premise of our private conversations was that he was eventually going to mess up. Maybe this was it.
No,
Zistalmu said firmly.
We expect him to fail on a massive, disastrous level. Not in something as mundane and simple combat. No, something happened at Hawksim. Something that involved Thrawn. Apparently, this Jixtus knows all about it.
He cocked his head slightly to the side.
My question is, do you?
I know nothing beyond what was in the Hawksim reports, and what I reported to the Syndicure about Jixtus,
Thurfian said.
I presume you noticed that when he showed up again at Regal, he did talk to the Clara.
Whose report on the incident, I also note, was remarkably similar to yours,
Zistalmu said.
Including how Patriarch Rivlex virtuously sent the aliens on their way without making any deals.
You think he did?
Thurfian asked. Zistalmu snorted.
The way the Claw and Dusklaw have been at each other's throats forever. I think that if you dangled something in front of Rivlex that he thought he could stab them with, he'd buy it like a shot.
That vid Jixter showed us certainly isn't that magic spear,
Thurfian warned.
All it's good for is to light unverifiable fires under the Dusklaw. The other three families...
Hold it!
Zistalmu cut in, his eyes shifting away from the cam.
There's an emergency alert coming in.
Thurfian looked over at his own data feed monitor. Nothing was showing the double red border that would indicate an alert. It must be something on the private Arisi channel. A situation pertaining only to the Arisi or one of their allies. Zistalmu muttered a curse.
What was it that you said about lighting fires?
He asked, his voice suddenly grim.
What is it?
Thurfian asked.
Jamiron,
Zistalmu told him.
A Claw convoy there is being attacked.
That's impossible,
Thurfian insisted, keying the monitor into the Defense Force feed.
Jixtus and the Kilgees can't be stupid enough to think they can get away with an overt attack.
It's not the Kilgees,
Zistalmu cut him off.
It's...
His lips compressed.
It's the Aragol and Zordlak.
Thurfian felt his mouth drop open.
What?
Four Claw freighters from the family's electronics manufacturing complex have been intercepted by two Aragol and two Zordlak patrol ships,
Zistalmu said.
Their escort cruisers fighting back. Three Claw system patrol ships are trying to assist. Damn. Three more Aragols are engaging the Claw patrol.
You're sure about their identities?
Thurfian asked, his mind reeling. What did they think they were doing?
Their family crests are covered,
Zistalmu said.
But the reports say the obscuring masks fit the proper shapes for those crests. They also say the ships show their families' specific design peculiarities.
I see,
Thurfian said, keying his monitor to the Myth Family Fleet status listings. This attack made no sense at all. But right now, that didn't matter. There would be time enough to sort it out after the Claw freighters were safe.
All right,
he said.
We have two patrol ships at Rentor. I can send them to assist.
They'll never get there in time.
Depends on how well the defenders can hold up,
Thurfinn said.
We've also got a light cruiser traveling from Rentor to Spossia that should be passing Jamiron just about now.
No, don't bother,
Zistalmu said.
It's a long shot,
Thurfinn said.
But if the captain decides to stop at Jamiron, I can send a message at...
I said no!
Thurfinn twitched.
What are you saying?
I'm saying we'll handle it, Thurfinn,
Zistalmu ground out.
I mean, we'll handle it, your Venerante.
Thurfinn stared at him. Zistalmu's expression was tight, his eyes blazing with emotion.
Zistalmu, what's going on?
He asked carefully. Zistalmu took a long, shuddering breath.
This could be an attack by the Aragorn and Zodlak. Or it could be something entirely different.
Such as?
Such as a trick by the Myth,
Zistalmu said bluntly.
That's absurd!
Is it?
Zistalmu countered.
Face it, Thurfinn. Your Venerante. Our families have been locking antlers for centuries. We've both tried to create alliances with the Claw over those years, and neither of us have ever succeeded. Now, we've suddenly got aliens in the Ascendancy warning that the Zodlak, one of our allies, are thinking about teaming up with the Dasklaw. What better chance for the Myth to stage a false Zodlak attack against the Claw and then swoop in to save the day? I imagine the Claw would be very grateful for that assistance.
You can't possibly believe we'd do something like that,
Thurfinn protested.
Fine, our families are rivals, but I thought we had an understanding. Our common enemy, remember?
Thrawn?
Zistalmu snorted.
Maybe that was what he was once. I'm not so sure anymore.
Nothing has changed,
Thurfinn insisted. No, surely Zistalmu wasn't going to fall apart on him. Not now.
He's still a threat to the Ascendancy.
I have to go, your Venerante,
Zistalmu said.
My Speaker and Patriarch need my attention.
He paused, and his lip twitched.
And it's Syndic Prime, Zistalmu.
He reached off cam, and his face vanished from the display. For a few seconds, Thurfinn stared at the blank screen, his mind still spinning. What madness could have possessed the Aragorn and Zodlak families to pull something like this? He had no idea. But right now, that didn't matter. Zistalmu's wishes and suspicions be damned. If the Myth could help in this crisis, they would. Starting with a continuous broadcast message to the light cruiser he'd mentioned. With the relatively safe hyperspace travel within the Ascendancy, there was no particular reason for the cruiser's captain to pause in his journey for a navigation check or repositioning before continuing. But experienced and meticulous commanders sometimes did that anyway, just to be on the safe side. Thurfinn could only hope this particular captain was experienced and meticulous.
Prepare for breakout,
Zyenda called out to the Greyshrike's bridge crew, watching as the timer counted down. She gave a small, private sigh. Defense duty. The reason she'd joined the Expansionary Defense Fleet instead of the Defense Force in the first place was to avoid the monotony of General Ascendancy patrol work. She'd wanted to explore the chaos and look for threats out there, not sit in orbit around a planet waiting for those threats to come to her. But with an alien warship lurking in the darkness between star systems, and everyone from the nine ruling families on down worried about it, she could understand the sudden shuffling of duties. The Defense Force, plus the ruling family's private fleets, were perfectly capable of taking on that Kilji battlecruiser without any help, of course. But no one seriously believed that Jixtus had come alone. And with General Yib's brief diversionary attack on Chila the previous year still fresh in everyone's memory, the Sindicure wasn't interested in taking chances. On the other hand, the cautious approach carried its own set of risks. If there was an enemy fleet lurking within the Ascendancy, it made sense to pull all available Chiss forces into a defensive posture. But if the enemy was still gathering strength out in the chaos, suspending expansionary defense fleet patrols that might otherwise spot supply depots, assembly points, and communications relays could give the enemy time to organize. Coupled with the strict prohibition against preemptive action, that self-imposed blindness gave the enemy the opportunity to choose both timing and location. The last time Zyenda had ordered the Greyshrike to be at full alert when they arrived in a star system, she remembered, she'd gotten a few tactful questions about whether all that effort was really necessary. This time, there hadn't been a word out of anyone. Just one more small indication of how much life had changed in only a few short days. She looked up at Mid-Captain Chaprostrobe, standing silently beside her command chair, his eyes sweeping rhythmically around the bridge as he confirmed the Greyshrike was ready. He hadn't said anything about their new assignment, but Zyenda could tell he wasn't any more excited about guard duty than she was. But at least he would be spared whatever hassle Jamiron System Patrol put them through as they interrogated the Greyshrike into their defense pattern. Apros's watch had ended half an hour ago, and the only reason he was still on the bridge was to be available if Zyenda needed him for any last-minute details. Once he confirmed that everything was in hand, he would be safely off the bridge. Zyenda looked back at the timer.
"Stand by, breakout," she called. 3, 2, 1.
The hyperspace swirl became stars, and the Greyshrike's guard duty at Jamiron had officially begun.
"Full scan,"
she ordered, searching the starscape. The planet was home to several major manufactories, which meant a fair amount of traffic in and out, and any prudent pilot knew to bring them out of hyperspace at a cautious distance to make sure they didn't run into anyone.
"Signal Patrol Command that we've arrived,"
she continued, searching the sky. Even at the Greyshrike's current distance, they should be close enough to at least see a hint of their ultimate destination. There was a faint flicker just about where the planet should be.
"Senior Captain, I've got laser fire,"
Vimsk said sharply.
"Mid-range level, 4 degrees starboard."
"It's near the planet,"
Senior Commander Aragaloxumph added from the weapon station.
"Combatants too small to make out from here. Probably patrol ships or gunboats."
"Belay that call to Patrol Command,"
Zyenda ordered as Apros crossed the bridge to the weapon station.
"If whoever's shooting out there hasn't spotted us, let's not announce ourselves. Mid-Captain Apros?"
"Weapon systems and crews are ready," Apros confirmed, leaning over Galaxu's shoulder as he checked the monitors.
"Acknowledged," Zyenda said, frowning at the sensor display. Vimsk was right. The ships were too small to show anything other than vague blurs from here.
But none of the reports had said anything about the Kilji battlecruiser having any fighter escorts. Had Jixtus brought in more forces, like everyone was expecting him to? Or was this something new? Well, whoever they were going to regret starting a fight over a Chiss planet.
"Wikiv, I need an in-system jump to combat range,"
she told the pilot.
"As close as you can get without sacrificing a safety margin."
Yes, ma'am,
Wickiff said, peering at her displays as she worked rapidly at her control board.
We can't get too close anyway. They're still pretty deep in the gravity well. I can't get us closer than about 50 kilometers.
Good enough,
Zyenda said.
Tell me when you're ready. Yes, ma'am.
The seconds ticked by. Zyenda gazed at the distant planet, forcing herself to remain calm. Sitting here, watching helplessly as a battle raged, was excruciating. But she knew better than to rush an in-system jump, especially one that would take them close to the critical line in Jamiron's gravity well. She ran her eyes over the status displays, just for something to do.
Got it, ma'am,
Wickiff said.
Bridge, stand ready,
Zyenda said.
Wickiff, 3, 2, 1.
The starscape twitched. The distant planet grew instantly to fill half the viewport, and the tiny flickers Zyenda had seen became the blazing laser fire of a running battle directly ahead.
Trent, warn them off,
she ordered. She looked at the sensor display, noting the number of ships and their positions, and felt her eyes widen.
Vimsk, confirm sensor readings,
she said.
Confirmed, Captain,
the sensor officer said.
Targets are 4 Klar freighters, with 1 light cruiser escort. Attackers are...
Her professional tone stumbled.
4 Chiss patrol ships.
2 Klar patrol ships coming around from polar orbit,
Galoxu reported.
3 more Chiss patrol ships. They're engaging the 2 Klar.
Zyenda hissed between her teeth. Was this some family dispute that had boiled over into armed combat? In past millennia, such things had been distressingly common, but that kind of violent overreaction had supposedly ended 300 years ago, following the creation of the modern Syndicure. Was someone seriously trying to go back to the old ways? If they were, starting a fight in the middle of an ascendancy-wide crisis was just plain stupid. She could only hope the Greyshrike could stop the nonsense before it went too far.
Wickiv, get us in there,
she ordered.
Galoxu, prepare spheres.
Spheres ready, ma'am,
Galoxu confirmed.
We need to be a little closer for optimal range.
Understood,
Zyenda said.
Use your best judgment on the timing. Trent, any response?
No, ma'am,
Trent said.
The attackers are jamming all communications.
You have IDs on anyone?
Not yet, ma'am,
Trent said.
I can see through the jamming enough to tell that the freighters and cruisers are running beacons, but they aren't clear enough to make out. There's nothing coming from the attackers.
Zyenda nodded. Hardly surprising, given the circumstances.
Vimsk, can you at least tell if they're local Jamiron defenders or if they're outsiders?
Sorry, ma'am,
Vimsk said.
I should be able to see ID numbers or family crests at this range, but I'm not spotting anything.
Looks like they've been masked or obliterated, Apros said. Maybe we'll be able to pick up some hints when we're closer.
Or pick up some prisoners,
Zyenda said.
Vimsk, what's the freighter status?
The patrol ships are taking them apart,
the sensor officer said grimly.
Looks like they've already disabled the freighter's hyperdrives. Clean punches in just the right places. 1 or 2 shots each. They knew what they were doing.
Understood,
Zyenda said, scowling. Family warships usually showed slight variations in weaponry and exterior decoration. Freighters were just freighters, though, and everyone used mostly the same standard models with standard internal layouts. And that uniformity had now played into the attackers' hands. Zyenda had hoped that if they could distract the patrol ships long enough, the freighters might be able to cover the short distance to the edge of the gravity well and escape. With their hyperdrives gone, that was no longer an option. But if the Greyshrike couldn't help them escape, it could at least give them some breathing space. Spheres! Six-shot volley on the attackers. 3, 2, 1.
The Grey Shrike gave the usual twitch as the half-dozen plasma spheres shot out from their tubes.
Spheres on target, Galaxu reported. Impact in...
Spheres are disintegrating, ma'am,
Vimps cut in. Syenda looked over at the tactical display. Vimps was right. All six plasma spheres had somehow lost their self-focusing sheaths and were boiling away their ionic energy into empty space. Galaxu?
Confirmed, Senior Captain,
Galaxu said tightly.
I don't know how. They shouldn't all have gone at the same time that way.
You can sort it out later, Syenda said. Get me a second salvo.
Second salvo ready, ma'am.
Fire!
Another twitch of the Grey Shrike, and another six plasma spheres blazed toward the battling ships.
Syenda shifted her attention to the vid display, watching closely as the cam tracked the spheres toward their targets. Once again, the tightly packed balls of plasma abruptly shimmered and deformed, their containment balance failing as they broke apart into multiple flashes of released energy. But this time, Syenda spotted something. A group of somethings, actually, arrowing away from the attackers and intercepting the spheres. Were those? They were. Damn, she bit out under her breath. They're using divers.
What? Apros asked, half turning toward her.
Divers, Syenda repeated, her mind racing. The little anti-fighter missiles the Battle Dreadnought used against the Vigilant Spheres and Breachers the last time we tangled with it at sunrise.
That can't be, Apros objected, craning his neck to look at the sensor display. How could Chiss patrol ships get a hold of those?
I don't know, Syenda said.
Vimsk? The image is blurry, ma'am,
Vimsk said, inclining her head slightly as she listened to the voices coming over her private speaker.
The analysts say these are smaller than the Sunrise Dibbers and are probably shorter range.
Different weapons, but the same tactic, Apros said.
So it would appear, Mid-Captain,
Vimsk said. Interesting, Syenda murmured, an icy resolve settling into her. And with that, she decided, it was time to stop playing nice.
This was no longer a simple family dispute.
Whoever was flying those patrol ships, they were connected to or working with the Ascendancy's enemies, and it was time to take them out. With survivors if possible, with shards of scrap metal if not.
Galaxu, give me lasers, she ordered. Full volley on...
Captain, the changing vector,
Vimsk warned.
Two bogies breaking off freighters, moving to engage us.
Good, Syenda said, checking the vector marks on the tactical. The freighters were still under attack by the other two patrol ships, but the group movement was taking that battle away from the two that were now targeting the Grey Shrike. If Syenda held off her own counterattack a few more seconds, the freighter should be safely out of her line of fire. Galaxu, target bogey lasers. Hold fire until my command.
The words were barely out of her mouth when the two patrol ships opened fire. Targeting sensors 2 and 3 hit, Apros reported. Near miss on lasers 1 and 3, 2 hits on port side hull, and 1 on starboard. Barrier nodes intact. No significant damage to the ship.
Barrier down 5%, Galaxu added. Crews are taking over fire control from the damaged sensors.
Acknowledged, Syenda said, feeling a frown crease her forehead. A remarkably ineffective attack, all things considered, especially given that the patrol ships had already demonstrated impressive marksmanship by wrecking the freighter's hyperdrives. All right, Galaxu. Show them how it's done. 3, 2, 1.
The Grey Shrike's lasers flashed out, burning across Jamiron's ionosphere and slashing into the patrol ships. A second laser salvo lanced out from the attackers toward the Grey Shrike, digging into the electrostatic barrier, but again, causing no real damage. For a few seconds, the lasers dueled, the intensity of fire from the patrol ships dropping steadily as Galoxu's counterattack systematically destroyed their weaponry. The final patrol ship lasers went silent.
Bogey lasers destroyed,
Galoxu reported.
Bogey's changing course,
Wickiv put in.
Pitching positive. Looks like they're going to head back to the freighters.
Like hell they are,
Zyanda said. Galoxu, cripple them. Once again, the Grey Shrike's lasers blazed out. This time, targeting first the maneuvering thrusters along the patrol ship's ventral sides, then shifting to the main thrusters as the Bogey's pitch turn presented them to view. The turn faltered as the patrol ship's drives died, their final vectors angling them away from the ongoing freighter battle and toward the edge of Jamiron's planetary rim.
Bogey's disabled and drifting, Senior Captain, Apros reported, reaching past Galoxu to key a pair of controls. Tractor beams ready, if you want to bring them in.
Zyanda checked the sensor readouts. The two patrol ships were no longer under power, but their reactors were still at normal function. If they could somehow repair their thrusters, they could conceivably get to the edge of the gravity well and escape into hyperspace. Chasing after them and reeling them in would eliminate any chance of that happening. But the Klar freighters were still under attack, and the light cruiser that had been escorting them had fallen silent and was drifting behind the battle. Rescuing the civilians had to be the Grey Shrike's first priority.
They'll keep mid, Captain, she told Apros.
Wickiv, get us over to the freighters.
Galoxu, set up a full spread of spheres.
If we're lucky, we can flicker everyone and sort them out at our leisure.
And if these bogeys also have dibbers?
Apros asked, as the Grey Shrike turned toward the battle and increased its speed.
Then Galoxu will just need to be very precise with his lasers,
Zyanda said.
Think you can handle that, Senior Commander?
Yes, ma'am, I can,
Galoxu assured her.
Spheres ready!
Zyanda nodded.
Stand by.
The Grey Shrike was nearly to firing range.
A few more seconds.
Senior Captain, the cruiser,
Fimsk said suddenly.
I think it's...
And without warning, the light cruiser lagging behind the freighters opened fire, its lasers blasting into the attacking patrol ship's main thrusters. The targets twitched violently, then veered out and up as they attempted to get clear of the cruiser's attack. Unfortunately for them, that evasive maneuver also moved them away from the freighters and put them squarely on the Grey Shrike's targeting vector.
Galoxu, spheres at the bogeys, Zyanda snapped. 3, 2, 1.
The plasma sphere shot out toward the patrol ships, aiming for Galoxu's best guess as to where the bogeys would be when the spheres arrived. Zyanda's eyes darted back and forth between the viewport and the tactical, watching the sphere's progress, wondering if the patrol ships would spot the incoming attack in time to evade.
The distance was closing. Almost there.
Zyanda jerked in her seat as a second blast of laser fire erupted from the Klar cruiser and blazed into the patrol ships. Once again, the targets tried to get clear, but this time they were unsuccessful. Even as the Grey Shrike's plasma spheres swept toward them, both patrol ships disintegrated in violent explosions.
Zyanda swallowed a curse. So much for taking prisoners.
But maybe the ones Galoxu had disabled could still be chased down.
Wickiv,
she began, turning to look out the viewport in that direction. The command died in her throat, as those ships, too, burst into writhing flame and disintegrated. For a moment, the Grey Shrike's bridge was silent.
Looks like we won't be taking prisoners,
Apros commented quietly.
Awfully convenient for someone.
It does look that way, doesn't it? Zyanda said, looking back at the vid display.
Earlier, Vimsk had said the attackers were taking the freighters apart. Now, as the Grey Shrike continued toward them, she saw that they were in worse shape than she'd realized. The freighter's thrusters were silent. Their power levels were barely registering, and two of the four seemed to be leaking air at a slow but steady rate. The Grey Shrike had arrived just in time, especially since their escort cruiser had gone dormant again, its final bit of power apparently having been expended on those last two laser attacks.
Senior Captain, Vimsk spoke up, the other battle appears to be over.
Zyanda looked at the tactical. With her full attention on the freighters and cruiser, she'd nearly forgotten about the two Klar patrol boats rounding the planet that had been set upon by three more unidentified attackers. Now the two Klar were alone, with dust and flickering fire where their assailants had been.
Destroyed or self-destructed? She asked.
Looks like a little of both, Vimsk said,
and Zyanda could see a high-speed repeat of the battle playing on one of her sensor displays.
The Klar got in some good shots, but then the bogies just blew up.
Interesting timing, Apros added, watching the same repeat on one of the weapons monitor displays. They destructed right after the freighter pair were destroyed, and just before our two bogies did likewise.
So, nothing intact left to be captured, Zyanda said. As you said, convenient. Let's hope the analysts on Chela can get something from the debris.
Signal from the cruiser, Senior Captain.
Shrent spoke up, keying his board.
Grey Shrike? This is Captain Rostu of the Klar family warship Orison.
A voice came from the bridge speaker.
Thank you for your timely arrival.
Glad we could help, Zyanda said. What happened here?
Just what it looks like,
Rosku said, and Zyanda could hear a hint of frustration and embarrassment drift into her voice.
We were caught off guard, pure and simple. They moved on us before we realized they were in Jamiran security. Hit us before we could get our barrier up. Then did a very professional job of overloading and crashing our main reactor.
Good thing we came along when we did, Zyanda said. What's your current status?
Reactor's nearly back online,
Rosku said.
We were just lucky that my crew was able to pull enough power from backups and non-essentials in time to get in those final laser shots.
Yes, we saw, Zyanda said. Might have been nice if you'd left a few prisoners alive, so we could figure out what this was all about.
Weren't a lot of options for fine-tuning,
Rosku said, a bit tartly.
What are you doing, Grey Shrike?
Zyanda frowned.
What do you mean?
You're moving on our freighters. I need you to back off.
Excuse me, Captain, but the freighters are in bad shape,
Zyanda said.
Maybe your sensors were damaged too much to...
My sensors are working perfectly, Grey Shrike,
Rosku interrupted.
As I said, we appreciate your assistance with the battle, but we'll take it from here.
With all due respect, Captain Rosku, it looks like you'll have enough on your platter just getting your own ship back up to speed,
Zyanda said.
We're more than happy to help out the freighters.
Maybe I need to make it clearer, Grey Shrike,
Rosku said bluntly.
You're not needed. More than that, you're not wanted. Whatever your reason for coming to Jamiron, I suggest you get on with it and leave Klar matters to the Klar family.
Zyanda looked over at Apros, saw her same surprise and disbelief in his own expression. She'd seen family stubbornness before, but Rosku was pushing it way beyond the limit. But there was nothing to be gained by going head-to-head with her. Time to try a different approach.
I understand,
she said in a conciliatory tone.
But we really don't have a choice.
By statute, we're not only permitted, but required to aid a vessel in distress.
Kindly do not insult my intelligence,
Roscoe growled.
Or my knowledge. That statute applies only to the Defense Force. The Expansionary Defense Fleet has an entirely different set of protocols and governing directives. I know that because I was once an officer there. I'll say it one more time. This is Clar family business, and the Clar family will handle it.
Do you even hear what you're saying?
Zyenda demanded, her already strained patience finally snapping.
Are you going to risk the lives of the freighter's crews out of pride?
Pride?
Roscoe shot back.
Is that what you think it is? Pride? Don't be ridiculous. Those freighters are carrying highly secret, highly proprietary tech. And we have no intention of letting officers or warriors from other families get their hands on it.
Do you seriously think we're interested in industrial espionage?
Zyenda countered.
This whole thing was sliding straight off the edge. Fine. I give you my word that no one will...
Your word?
Roscoe echoed.
Don't make me laugh. The word of an Arisi?
Zyenda stared at the bridge speaker, a sense of unreality flooding through her. The Chiss military was supposed to be immune from family pressures and rivalries. And now, a former Expansionary Defense Fleet officer was throwing those tangled webs straight into her face.
My family has nothing to do with this,
she said, forcing calmness into her voice.
I'm an officer of the Expansionary Defense Fleet.
Really?
Roscoe said scornfully.
We're attacked by Zodlak patrol ships, and you want me to believe their Arisi allies have nothing to do with it?
The attackers were Zodlak?
Zodlak and Aragol,
Roscoe said.
Don't try to deny it. We got a very clear look at them.
Captain Roscoe, this is Mid-Captain Apros,
Apros put in. Zyenda looked sharply at him, opening her mouth to deliver a sharp reprimand for interrupting the conversation, and closed it again. No, he was right. Roscoe had already made up her mind to resist anything Zyenda said or suggested. Apros was from the Chap family, allies of the Abek and Myth, and not at all friendly to the Arisi. Maybe he could talk some sense into her.
Mid-Captain Apros, you say?
Roscoe said.
So the Arisi and Zodlak give up and turn it over to the Chap and Abek? Hardly qualifies as a step up.
Apros's back stiffened just noticeably.
I understand your skepticism and distrust, he said, and Zyenda could hear the effort he was putting into keeping his voice steady.
He never said much about his family, but Zyenda knew he was quite proud of it.
However, whatever you may think about the Arisi, Senior Captain Zyenda is correct about our current status. The Council has assigned the Grey Shrike to Jamiron protective duty, and as such, we are temporarily under Defense Force protocols. We have no choice but to render aid.
You're obligated to offer it,
Roscoe said.
I'm not obligated to accept it. And I have no choice but to do everything necessary to protect my family's interests. Don't worry about the crews. They'll be fine until someone can get to them. Someone who's not connected in any way to their attackers.
Apros shot Zyenda a frustrated look.
You seem very certain, Captain. I trust you have evidence to back up your allegations.
They're not allegations,
Roscoe said.
They're established facts.
Then you won't mind letting us look at the data ourselves, Apros pressed. Unless you think an impartial analysis will yield a different conclusion, of course.
You can't bait me, Mid-Captain,
Roscoe said with a touch of scorn.
I know what I know. but fine. I'll have the recordings and data analysis compiled and sent to you. I've also just been informed that we have thrusters again, so we should be on our way to the freighters very soon.
Vimsk?
Zyanda asked quietly.
Confirmed, Senior Captain,
the sensor officer said, just as quietly.
Orosin's thrusters are powering up. Orosin is on the move.
Zyanda nodded.
Then we'll leave you to it, Captain Roscoe,
she said.
Please don't hesitate to call on us if we can be of assistance. Farewell.
Without waiting for any final comments Roscoe might want to unload, she keyed off the comm.
Well, that was interesting, Apros growled, his eyes flashing with anger and frustration. I don't wish to speak disrespectfully of a former fellow officer.
Then don't.
Zyanda cut him off. She could sympathize with her first officer. She was mad enough at Roscoe herself to flay the other woman alive. But such emotions weren't to be vented in public. Certainly not on the bridge.
And I'd ignore that hardly qualifies as a step up jibe. Some people just don't like anyone. Her loss, not yours.
I suppose, Senior Captain, Apros said, still sounding irritated.
Trust me, I've been hated by experts,
Zyanda said, a small part of her noting the private irony of her long and nurtured dislike of Senior Captain Thrawn. Her loss? Maybe.
Mid-Commander Wakif, take us to what's left of that first pair of patrol ships. Mid-Captain Apros, prepare two shuttles to sweep for debris. Mid-Commander Shrent, do we have Captain Roscoe's data yet?
It's coming through now, Senior Captain.
Good, Zyanda said. Make sure it's complete. Then get the analyst started on it. I want to know exactly what Roscoe saw that made her conclude the attackers were Aragol and Zodlak.
She looked out the viewport. The Orison was moving toward the crippled freighters now, though at low speed. Hopefully it would get there before anyone died.
Or maybe, she amended, what Roscoe thought she saw.
Memories. 6.
For the next 3 hours, Thras and Thrawn worked alone in the Stybla Stronghold Lounge where Patriarch Lamiav had left them. Thras used the time to pull up the cargo listings, as Thrawn had suggested, and started sifting through them. But those records held a lot of detail. If there was anything unusual, it wasn't obvious from his first pass. Thrawn, with his talent for seeing things that other people missed, would probably have done a better job. But while Thras had been slogging through the manifests, Thrawn had gone off on some other tangent entirely, concentrating on something that was apparently so engrossing he couldn't even spare enough mental capacity to hear Thras's questions and subtle probings. Thras had just decided it was time for his questions to get less subtle when Lamiav finally returned. Returned alone, Thras noted with mild surprise. Up to now, Senior Aide Lapinsick had always been hovering close to the Patriarch's side, ready to offer information, advice, and support. His current absence was a bit perplexing, maybe even a little ominous.
Good evening, Your Venerante,
Thras greeted the Patriarch as he hastily stood up. Thrawn, focused on his questus, didn't seem to notice the other's arrival.
I'm afraid we haven't made much progress.
Understandable,
Lamiav said, eyeing Thrawn still seated in his chair, but apparently deciding it wasn't worth calling him on his breach of etiquette.
It's a complicated matter. Has food been brought in for you? No? I'll make sure that oversight is remedied.
No need, Your Venerante,
Thrawn said, finally looking up.
We can eat aboard the ship.
Thras frowned at him. Ship? Was Thrawn planning to leave already? He opened his mouth to ask, glancing at Lamiav to see the other's reaction to Thrawn's odd comment.
The question died midway to completion. The Patriarch's face had gone rigid, his posture suddenly stiff.
How did you know?
He asked, his voice as strained as his face.
How did he know what?
Thras asked, thoroughly confused now.
The good news from your perspective,
Thrawn continued, ignoring both questions,
is that I don't think the Klar Patriarch knows about the special cargo. I believe the intensity of his search for the hijackers is motivated solely by a desire to find them before you and the Stibler do.
Wait a minute, you've lost me,
Thras put in, looking back and forth between Thrawn and Lamioff. Whatever Thrawn was talking about, the two of them were clearly on the same page, whereas Thras hadn't even found the right book.
What special cargo? What desire?
Your Venerante,
Thrawn prompted. Lamioff waved his hand, a short, twitchy motion.
You seem to know everything,
he said, crossing to them. He sank into his chair across from Thrawn.
Please, explain it to him.
Thank you, Thrawn said.
Let me begin by saying I was wrong about the Klar patrol pilot being part of the plot. I believe now that she was working as an agent of the Klar Patriarch, and had been alerted that the supposed Orbic transport might be a pirate in disguise, and was preparing to hijack another ship.
If she knew, why didn't she alert Patrol Command? Thras asked.
Because the Klar Patriarch didn't know for certain the attack would take place,
Thrawn said.
Alerting Command or deviating from her proper patrol path might have warned the hijackers and frightened them off.
Which would have been a good thing, right?
For that particular ship, yes, Thrawn said. But the hijackers would merely have traveled to a different system and chosen another target.
I see,
Thras murmured. This way, at least, the Spassia authorities had a record of the attack.
It's also likely she hoped she